When I first came to Spain in the late 1980s, it was a country which still required most young men to do the military service. It was obligatory. This country had a pretty decent military, fairly decent sized navy, though nothing like what it used to have, a decent air force, specialized forces, and such, as well as the support of NATO, and especially the Americans, who had military units in four different bases around the country. Three were Air Force bases, and the fourth was a naval base in Cadiz. Spain's arsenal was entirely conventional, as opposed to some of the other European neighbors, such as the UK and France, who mingled among the nuclear elite. But for a time, Spain also made a fairly serious effort to join that club, and let me tell you more about that today. This started all the way back in the 1940s when Spain, still ailing from the Civil War, actually looked into the possibility of bringing in nuclear power, initially for energy purposes. And I'm sure they were just one of many countries who were surprised at what had happened in Japan a few years earlier. And so there was this push to know more about this new technology. Now, at the time, Spain was essentially isolated internationally and in no position to develop anything serious. All the same, a committee was started on atomic research in 1948, but then it turned into the Nuclear Energy Board in 1951, and it was run by eminent scientific scholars such as José María Otero Navasquez, Manuel Lora Tamayo, Armando Duran, Juan Bigón, and others. They sort of got things going. Of this group, I would say Navasquez and Bigón were the individuals who seemed to put the longest lasting interest and effort into the program. Navasquez was a brilliant man with expertise in optics, physics, and nuclear energy. In fact, I think in 1942, he is said to have discovered nocturnal myopia, so he had an international reputation. Things were slow at first, but eventually in the 50s, things began to change when the United States and Spain warmed up to each other for basically strategic reasons. The Franco regime was desperately in need of some official recognition and looked to the United States, who in turn felt it could count on a fascist dictator or dictatorship to keep communism at bay in that part of the world. Many agreements were reached, among them those four bases I was telling you about. But the one that interests us here is nuclear energy, and there was a program called Atoms for Peace, which the US carried out with developing nations, of which Spain was certainly one of them. This was an initiative to share nuclear energy technology to be used for civil and not, that is, non-military purposes, research and investigation. To assist this program, the US eventually shared 25 tons of enriched uranium with some 30 countries. So the US was providing some of the know-how and some of the technology to get things started. It was also there to help enlighten people about the dangers of this technology and hopefully encourage the civil use of it and discourage the production of nuclear weapons. During the 50s, Spain continued to toy with the idea of building the bomb, in part as a deterrent against growing colonial unrest in places like Morocco. But despite the fact that at the time it possessed one of the largest uranium reserves in the world, and is still fairly sizable to this day, the Spanish were far from making it happen. Regardless, in 1958, the Nuclear Energy Center was opened in Madrid's biggest university, the Complutense, and that's when this technology really started to get going. And then in the early 60s, 1963 to be exact, The attempt to develop a nuclear program for military purposes was formalized, the thinking being that if they had the atomic capabilities, they would be taken more seriously on an international level. For example, it would all but guarantee a place in the United Nations Security Council. This idea was also probably influenced by France's decision to produce nuclear weapons in the 1960s under Charles de Gaulle. This independent-minded French leader was always in favor of strengthening Europe's position to offset dependency on the Americans and the Soviets, and it was an idea that made sense to some of the sectors of the Spanish authorities. The French would help Spain build a nuclear reactor for energy purposes, and with the plutonium residue that came from it, they would be sent back to France to make atomic weapons. Some of them would potentially be sold to Spain. And also Spain would keep some of that plutonium for its own production. You see, there are different materials you can use for these bombs. Plutonium is the easier method or the easier element for making bombs. Uranium is probably more powerful, but it's more complex. The man in charge of this project was Guillermo Velarde, a physicist and military commander, but mainly a scientist. He was a talented man with a lot of knowledge in nuclear energy. He had studied and worked in the United States, I think at the University of Pennsylvania, and was probably Spain's foremost expert on the subject. The project became known as Proyecto Islero, or Project Islero, in honor of what is probably the most famous bull in bullfighting history. A bull which killed one of the most famous bullfighters in history, Manolete. In fact, it was this historic bovine that brought me to this story when I was reading up on it a few weeks ago. And they mentioned that one of the consequences of this bull and its history and its fame was that this project was named after it. According to the story, Velarde himself was the one who came up with that idea, and he used Islero in an ironic sense since he was sure that it was going to cause all sorts of complications for him and the program, the way a complicated bull might be. And it seems as if he was right. Franco himself was intrigued by this idea. A lot of people call this Franco's atomic weapons program. The sense is that he wasn't so much directly behind it. These were sort of initiatives that were brought to his attention. He was intrigued by it, but he was also somewhat hesitant to irritate his allies, especially the United States. The United States was supplying Spain with a lot of technology and support in nuclear energy, so it also was not interested in rubbing it the wrong way. All the same, the program went ahead and progress was slow. The team had a lot of theory worked out. The theory was pretty much clear, but they lacked the specific know-how on making the bomb. They were missing vital information. But then something that was potentially a humongous mishap with potentially catastrophic consequences happened and ironically brought new life into the program. In January of 1966, on the coast of Almeria, in fact, 31,000 feet above that coast, the coast of Spain, a fuel tanker, an American fuel tanker plane, while it was doing a mid-air refueling with a B-52, collided with that plane, or something went terribly wrong, and the two planes burst into flames. And that B-52 happened to be carrying four thermonuclear weapons, all of which plummeted to Earth right towards Spain. Now, thankfully, none of them went off as a nuclear bomb, but two did detonate conventionally, turning them into sort of dirty bombs and spreading radioactivity in the area, some of which is still present to this day. I've done a podcast on this. You can listen to that at a different time if you get a chance. The third bomb remained intact, and the fourth one was located at the bottom of the sea around 80 or 90 days later. Spain's expert nuclear energy team rushed down to investigate the situation, as did the American military authorities and the Spanish military authorities and the government and even members of the press, as well as probably a spy or two. And anyway, people like Velarde were able to gather enough information while they were there to start to put together the solution to the puzzle on how to make the bomb work. So this was a cloud, it's a radioactive cloud that had a silver lining. Anyway, the know-how they learned helped to reactivate the project until it reached the point that Spain was looking as if it was ready to take everything to another level, to begin to construct and test weapons. Once again, Franco was given a rundown on the progress of the project, and he continued to be unenthusiastic about going military. I know that may seem unusual for a general to be so cautious, but to be honest with you, that seems to be somewhat in character with Franco, if my understanding of him is right. He was cautious as a general of the armed forces during the Spanish Civil War, and he was cautious much of his life. If there's one thing you could say for him, he knew how to stay in power by not rocking the boat too much. He was also keenly aware that once word got out, relations with the US would be damaged and the country would be probably subjected to sanctions, economic sanctions, and they could have been devastating. So he insisted on the part about the weapons being put on hold, but allowed them to continue developing the technology for civil purposes. And several nuclear plants were built. It was also during this time that the treaty on the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons was drawn up and signed by the first set of countries, around 50 in all. Spain opted out as it wasn't sure what its future was in that department. And then by the 1970s, as Franco was getting older and probably not as much in touch with the political decisions of the day, the Spanish government was continuing to work on this project under people like Luis Carrero Blanco, who was the prime minister. But then a couple of things complicated matters. The United States realized that Spain hadn't signed the treaty, the non-proliferation treaty, and that got them thinking that maybe these guys have something up their sleeve. And in 1973, in fact, on December 19th, 1973, Henry Kissinger went to Spain, a very quick visit, and he was touring around Europe and he stopped in Spain. And they talked about a lot of things, and one of them was probably the potential nuclear capability that Spain was trying to obtain. And the Secretary of State made his opposition very clear. The very next day, the Prime Minister, Luis Carrero Blanco, was assassinated by the Basque separatist terrorist group ETA, ETA, in Madrid. Carrero Blanco was one of the biggest proponents of this plan. So, conspiracy theorists will sometimes point to a connection between the visit by the American statesman and the shocking death of the prime minister the very next day, but it seems like it's little more than a total coincidence. Franco died in 1975, but the project was not buried with him. So that's sort of further proof that this wasn't just a Franco initiative or program. This had more to do with Spain as a country in general and the military. In fact, throughout the transition, the Spanish government continued to toy with this idea of creating nuclear bombs. In fact, I think they had a pretty specific plan to create up to 36 or 37 bombs. But as we headed into the 80s, that pretty much came to an abrupt halt. Spain was opening up to the world. It was about to become a member of the European Union and also become a member of NATO. It also was going to host major events like the World Cup and the Summer Olympics in 1992. So it seemed as if trying to do something as controversial as creating a nuclear arsenal would have been expensive and counterproductive to many of these plans and ambitions that Spain had. Anyway, by that time, nuclear weapons and that whole idea of nuclear energy was becoming very controversial. It would have been going against the current thinking of the day. In 1987, Spain signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and that put an end to that project. Now, there's no question that if Spain wanted to, it could produce a nuclear weapon. It has the means and the know-how, but not the interest. Nuclear energy still makes up about 20% of Spain's energy sources, thanks to 7 reactors currently in use. It could have been more. Spain planned on building a bunch more, but a moratorium was imposed by the Socialist Party in the early 80s. These were times when, as I was telling you before, nuclear power was at a low point in terms of popularity and credibility, with accidents on Three Mile Island in the United States and Chernobyl in the Soviet Union, confirming people's fears. There were a number of reactors that were actually up and ready to start running, but never did. And in fact, as a result of that, and all the money that was invested into those programs and into those reactors, for some reason, the compensation bill, which went into the billions, was passed on to all of us who lived here in Spain in the electricity bills for about 20 years. Anyway, Spain is a country which still benefits sizably from this energy source, but the Spanish government is planning to start phasing out the use of nuclear energy starting in 2027. We'll see how that develops. But there you have it. Yes, Spain was very close to becoming sort of a mouse that roared. It wasn't that small a country, but it was sort of a small power trying to mingle with the big boys, and it came pretty close. But in the end, Project Islero died out, and it's part of history. And that'll be all for today. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us any comments or questions because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the very best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.